Hello and welcome to a run-of-the-mill, everyday Gridiron Gentlemen podcast where absolutely no news has happened whatsoever. Tonight we're going to be talking about, well, actually there was some news and we're going to be talking about that in a bit. But also we're going to be talking quarterbacks and offensive line. James was doing an awful lot of very hard work and I look forward to hearing his thoughts on them. I have occasional thoughts, but you're going to be hearing a lot of James tonight. So James, how are you doing?
Doing okay. What was
James? You've got your hair's looking very very sensible. Oh, there we go.
It's better.
It looks good though, James. It looks good. You've got good looking hair at the moment, man.
I'm in the mid 40s and there's not the slightest hint of any receding or bald patches. It's ridiculous.
I know, right? I've got a bit of that as well, so I can't really say anything. My hair's down to my well, down to my nipples, if I'm honest with you, but it's
and they're fantastic nipples.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, right. I feel like we're dancing around this because we're trying to avoid talking about what's just happened. Not 20 minutes before we started recording the podcast, the inevitable has finally happened. It rolls around to draft week, the Monday of draft week, no less. And Aaron Rodgers has come out and basically joined the Jets. I don't think that's quite how it works. I'm pretty certain the Packers had to trade him there. But now, but he is the big news for draft week at the moment, for at least the next few days. Aaron Rodgers joins the Jets. My initial thoughts were that it wasn't that great a deal for the Packers. But the more I think about it, the more I think he openly said he was either going to retire or join the Jets. So essentially the Packers got, for either a player that didn't want to be there, they lose a ridiculous quarterback contract, which now heads over to the Jets. And then they swap places in the draft this year, first round pick. The Packers gain a second round, the Jets' second round pick. The Jets gain the fifth round pick, which, I mean, I think once you get past the third round pick, nothing really matters anyway. And then it's a condition.
It's deck chairs on the Titanic. Dan. That's all it is.
Yeah, exactly. And then next year they get a conditional second round pick that could, if he plays 65% of the snaps.
You see, that's the conditional pick, right? I looked at the conditional pick before I saw the terms of it, and I thought, well, the conditional pick I quite like because that anchors him to a level of performance. Oh, no, it doesn't. It limits him to a snap count. Yeah. Okay, so, all right. This conditional pick, okay, it's meaningless. Of course he's going to play more than 65% of the team's snaps. Who's going to bench Aaron Rodgers? So just give them the first.
Think it's some retirement, potential retirement guarantee. So that if he gets two-thirds of the way through the season, and goes, you know what? Actually, I want to go spend my life living on an island with my shaman. Then, he can do that. They still lose a second round pick. They still have to pay a ridiculous contract. But at the same time, then they don't lose a first round pick. Because, like, I'd imagine that would smart if they lost a first round pick for a player that's only played 65% of his snaps, or less than 65% of his snaps. So, like, I think if you play 65% of your snaps, then you are in a pretty good position to probably make the playoffs if he's going to play to the standard that we would assume he probably will play at, but I don't think we can 100% assume that. But, yeah.
Unless, of course, there's some kind of Russell Wilson freak drop-off thing that happens where he suddenly becomes this horrific.
Here's what I was going to say.
Instead of getting, like, a thoroughbred, you get a pantomime horse.
I think there is a significant difference between historically how good Russell Wilson is and how good Aaron Rodgers is. Rodgers, however, is older. He has just come from one of the more reliable teams in the NFL, who seems to have managed to get decent performance out of. They've got 30 years of Hall of Fame quarterbacks play got on their side. And
before that, they had Don Majkowski and Lynn Dickey, who weren't terrible.
But what I was going to say is that it's one of those things that, sure, get excited about it. Like, it's an exciting day. But in the back of your head, you've got to always wonder, wasn't this dream team meant to happen in Denver last year with Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos and the offensive coordinator? Is he the offensive coordinator in New York now as well? Is he, or is he just on the offensive staff? I can't remember.
I think he might.
I'm just going to look it up. But it's, I'm just saying, it's there is nothing you can do in the NFL that isn't without risk. Yeah, Nathaniel Hackett's the OC.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
The Jets turned the lights down low, lit some candles, rose petals on the floor, spelling out Aaron, and, you know, and a trail of chocolates that led them to their boudoir, and there's Woody on the bed.
Yeah.
Legs akimbo saying, jump aboard, Mr. Rogers, jump aboard.
Yeah. We'll go get breakfast with Alan Lazard in the morning.
Yes. They should change the name to the Jersey Cum Dumpsters. But anyway.
Oh, my God.
Do we leave that in?
Ah, probably. There's Woody. Oh, no, he appears to be trapped in a washing machine. Anyway.
Sorry, Josh.
Oh, yeah, we get to say that again. Sorry, Josh. Josh is by the looks of things, in two minds. If you want to come join the conversation, come join the Discord, pin tweet on our Twitter. It's definitely worth it, especially when things like this happen as well, when we've got a number of Patriots fans who are like, I hate them even more now. you know what? I'm kind of sad as a Bears fan. Because I kind of wanted to see him decline in the same division whilst Justin Fields is just absolutely mincing their defense.
Okay. I get that.
It was like, at the same time, that there is like a cautionary tale I'd like to tell, which is when the first year of what's-his-face was the Chiefs offensive coordinator now. God, I can't even remember. Matt Nagy, yeah. I can't even bring myself to remember his name anymore.
Clubbed up, baby. Clubbed up.
Oh, I still miss it. Still the most fun team I've ever watched. That the first game that season, most fun Bears team I've ever watched, is what I meant. Sorry, yeah. The first game of the season, the first half, Khalil Mack, first game for the Bears, was just on an absolute tear. Just absolutely annihilating Aaron Rodgers. And then he went off injured. And I remember mouthing at the TV going, bring him back. He needs to see this. Bring him back. So they did. And they bloody won. So, like, there's a cautionary tale of, like, I'd like to see him, like, decline in the NFC North, basically, as the Lions overtake everyone. But at the same time, he'll still probably beat the Bears twice a year, every year. So maybe it's for the best that he's not in the division anymore.
Yeah, it is the best.
So what, the Packers have, what, a year of Jordan Love now? Don't they have to decide next year whether they're going to pick up his fifth-year option?
Very much.
This year? Yeah.
Wait, hold on. This year? Lord.
So this is his third year, right? So it's entering his fourth year. They have to decide whether they're going to pick up his fifth-year option. Is it his third year? Let's have a look. You can tell how much research we've done before this, by the way. 2020, so...
I'm disappointed that we didn't have, like, literally a file prepared for this. Like, you know, how like, people prepare for the apocalypse.
Yeah, and, like...
prepare for this.
And, like...
a bit more.
The fact that someone's already written Bob Dylan's obituary, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we should be doing that shit.
Yeah. So, like, so we're just ready to go, basically, when stuff like this happens, yeah.
Yeah, NFL Network, they've already got like rows and rows of obituaries. Everybody's Dan Campbell's, Peyton Manning's, Andrew Luck. Don't say Andrew Luck out loud. I don't want anything to happen to Andrew Luck.
No, he's so lovely.
Yeah, he's so lovely. No, but you know how it is, and they've blatantly got a folder for if Aaron Rodgers gets traded, and they just open up that Google Drive and they have everything ready.
I feel sad for David Bakhtiari, who genuinely seemed like he loved Aaron Rodgers.
I don't. That's his own problem. That's his problem. Yeah, I don't.
I don't really
he selected,
either.
He selected friends poorly.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So I've got some thoughts. For starters, Aaron Rodgers is going to be wearing number 8 rather than number 12, which was his college number. So that's fine. Whatever, okay. Doesn't matter. Because obviously Namath wore 12. So, but Namath has said that he's quite happy for Aaron Rodgers to wear number 12. I genuinely don't think Namath cares about anything, really. So,
I mean, Joe Namath at this point in his career is just going to turn around, smile like a very cool old man and go, do I look like I give a fuck?
I've won as many Super Bowls as him.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would be funny if he did win one with the Jets, though, wouldn't it?
Would it?
I think it would.
I'd have a lot of sick in my mouth watching him beat Pat Mahomes. I would just feel awful.
Oh, yeah.
Because
Okay.
for him to do that, he has to stop a very young, deserving group of quarterbacks who I
Yeah, true.
like more than I will ever like him.
Yeah, just to get to
Beat
the
them.
Super Bowl before he has to play a second-rate quarterback from the NFC. But yeah.
Exactly. Plus also, okay, do you seriously think that deep in the playoffs in an AFC Championship game, he's going to have what it takes to go toe-to-toe with Pat Mahomes?
No. Who's the best quarterback in the NFC now? Jalen Hurts?
Me? It's you.
It's me.
No. It may well be Jalen Hurts.
Yeah. I think it must be.
It's Jalen Hurts and Dak Prescott in the mix.
Stafford, maybe?
Wow. Yeah, Matt
that's,
Stafford.
That's where we're at. Bear in mind, my opinions on
what's
Matt
left
Stafford
of him?
Are like notoriously low compared to most people. And I think he might be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFC. It's got to be Hurts, isn't it?
Yeah, because Stafford's more machine than that, man. Just an evil.
Yeah, because you go through the NFC East, Danny Dimes, Hurts, whoever Washington are going to roll out, and
they're going to roll out Sam Howell this year.
Yeah,
he gets his shot.
They did pick someone up, didn't they? Washington, I can't remember now. My brain's fried. But yeah, Jacoby Brissett, who will almost certainly be starting by like week 2 anyway. So,
yeah.
And then the South is now whoever the Bucks are rolling out. Well, the Bucks rolling out. Just learn that now. Panthers. Actually, who knows? Maybe it's whoever the Panthers draft. Derek Carr's probably in the mix.
Yeah,
as well.
Derek Carr will give the Saints. Actually, probably Derek Carr's in the top 3 or 4.
Yeah. Desmond Ridder.
No, you're confusing good quarterbacks with quarterbacks that we have some hope for.
And then the West is, Baker Mayfield's the Bucks quarterback. There we go.
That's all right then. Problem solved. Kirk Cousins. He's a top 5 NFC quarterback.
I mean, Kyler Murray might be a top 5 NFC quarterback.
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
Then Stafford. Oh, Geno. Of course, Geno.
Brock Purdy.
Lord, we're really scraping
the barrel. Top 10 NFC quarterback at this point.
Okay, Jared Goff.
Do you know what, Jared Goff? Yeah, he's probably a top 5 NFC quarterback.
He's been all right, yeah. Him,
good God.
Jordan Love, Justin Fields, and Kirk Cousins.
The AFC are literally going to be winning Super Bowls for the next 7 or 8 years.
Well, yeah, unless the Eagles make it every year, of course. But, you know, even so, yeah, I'd be surprised if. But I'm in that period of time again where I think that the current Super Bowl champions will probably win the Super Bowl next year because they've proved they can win games, not realizing at all that it definitely doesn't work that way. So, yeah.
No, it doesn't.
No.
Well, yeah, so I think, I'm happy for the Jets. I'm not actually.
Heck of a team, though. Like, if Aaron Rodgers can play to a reasonable standard, that's a heck of a team. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, quarterback. Breece Hall, Michael Carter, Garrett Wilson, Mecole Hardman.
Yep.
Tyler Conklin, CJ Uzomah.
Alan Lazard,
decent offensive line.
Tim Boyle, just in case that Aaron gets bored.
Yeah.
And Zach Wilson, you know?
Yeah. I say it's nice that Zach Wilson got some early snaps in with the ones.
I mean, you know, he was blatantly just like, oh, I'm going to get something really, really quick, all right? I just have some because I know what's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think it's just the most. I'd like to think it wasn't contrived, but right at the point where it should be all about kids, yeah, all about the future.
Yeah.
Okay. We are poking at the reanimated corpse of Aaron Rodgers and going, woohoo!
How annoyed do we think he's going to get when Sauce Gardner is just absolutely annihilating him in practice?
Please let that happen.
There's only so many receivers you can blame.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good defense as well. It's a good team. It's a good team.
It is a good team, as long as they remember who their wide receiver one is. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Spoilers, it's not Alan Lazard.
It's really not. it's not Mecole Hardman either.
No, but I did like that signing. I think that's quite good.
It does tell me what they're doing in the draft, though. They're blatantly going offensive line.
Yeah, well, oh my God, James.
I know.
What a segue.
I was just waiting. I want to get us off this person.
Yeah, no, I understand that. So we're going to go straight into offensive line then, James.
It's going to have to be offensive line because we're going to climax after that, aren't we?
We're going to do quarterbacks and then
much like Aaron.
So I think the next pod, which I think will be Wednesday,
it's going to have to be Wednesday. We're
going to do about an hour on cornerbacks and about 5 minutes on safeties.
It's 3 minutes, 10 seconds.
And then maybe can I say
Illinois?
And then maybe we'll do a collaborative mock draft because I've got some slightly bad news that I don't. If you're listening to this before, you've seen the tweet that will be going out tomorrow as I'm recording this. I don't have time to run the mock draft this year. It's that simple.
Sadness.
Yeah. What we might do is I don't have anything going on Thursday evening. So if people really want to do a mock draft and they're not fussed about it being on the pod or anything, then what we'll do is we'll do it on Discord on Thursday evening before the draft. We won't record it or anything. We'll just do it for a bit of fun.
An argument, you say?
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll get as many people together, we'll pick teams, and then we'll pick for the teams as well. So what we'll do is we'll do like a live mock draft, and maybe we'll still put it up on Twitter, but it'll just be kind of on the fly. So if you are interested, come join the Discord, and we'll do it on that. It won't be as well organized as it has been in the past, but it will be an opportunity for all of us to get together and have a chat about the draft that we'll be watching later as well.
I've got a big board.
Have you?
I haven't. It's just a list.
Yeah.
Players I hate, players I don't. It's great.
Who's number one on your big board?
Who's number one on my big board? It's Jalen Carter.
Yes. Jalen Carter.
It's based entirely on talent and relative to position and how good they are at their position. It's Jalen Carter.
That's interesting.
Bryce Young is number four.
Yeah.
Will Anderson is number two.
Yeah.
Player at number three, we will be talking about on the next episode.
It's
a corner whose name might rhyme with Trayvon Bibberpoon.
I was about to say, yeah, he stands out, doesn't he? He's a bit good.
I am incredibly high on him, like incredibly high. But more on that another episode.
Yeah, definitely. But we're doing offensive line now. Yep. How are you feeling about this year's offensive line class, James?
There is the opportunity for people to find lots of mid-level starters who might develop into Pro Bowl caliber players, is how I would say it. There's no one who's like who's like a Rashawn Slater or a Penei Sewell in this class at all.
No.
But lots of guys
Yeah.
who, you can pick and could end up being very useful, very good players. And there's a couple that, a couple of things start to click for them in the pros. They could be excellent players. They could be perennial pro bowlers. One of whom just needs, I think, to potentially change positions. Well, there's
Interesting.
two that probably need to potentially change positions because if they did, they would project to be an every year Pro Bowl player at that position down the road. So, I will be very honest with you. My list of centers is tiny.
Okay.
Three people.
Okay.
So just bear with, while I get them up for you. I have ranked them. It has been a very long draft season for me. I think it's the first one that I've done ever for one reason or another solo. So it's been like, ouch, a bit, but it's gone fine. I feel like I have a handle on it.
Next year I plan to have a team in place, I think is going to be the goal. I need to we need to be a bit more organized, basically.
I mean, I always sort of look at pretty much everybody,
Yeah.
but it's just where there were some players I'd probably spend like 10, 15 minutes on, I now spend like an hour on watching some of the deeper players and some of the position groups that I wouldn't cover in detail. I mean, I still do my 30, 40 wide receivers and like my 10 or 15 quarterbacks. This year it's been like 10 or 15 of everything.
It's good. I try and
So.
when I only I've only had a chance to watch like 10 of the players that I knew I was going to 10 of the positions I knew I was going to be talking about. So, but yeah, this year, which is unfortunate. I mean the year I obviously had the most time was the lockdown year, when I did pretty much every position and
Yeah.
yeah, in depth. But it was is this year's been I haven't had much time. So, thank you, James, for carrying the load a bit.
It's absolutely fine. So we're going to go for centers, and I have ranked them. And my number one center I was torn on for a very, very long time. I did finally end up making a decision a couple of days ago. And my number one center, let me just quickly open up my phone. Again, my draft folder takes ages. It should already be open, James. Why are you being such an idiot? I should have opened it the second the episode began. So, scroll, scroll, scroll. Open folder. Luke Whipler of the Ohio State Buckeyes is my number one rated center. He's my favorite. So some people it's John Michael Schmitz, but I think Luke Whipler is probably the player that, of all of them, is going to project to be at worst a 20 to 30 center, at best somebody who goes to a few Pro Bowls. He is, of all the centers in this top three, probably the most agile and physically gifted, probably the most athletic. He's also the one who is probably the smallest of all of them. 6'3", 300 pounds, which, is it sounds huge, but it's not that huge for an interior offensive lineman. He's also, out of all of them, he's got the best athletic profile as well. That many snaps at a big program like Ohio State, going against that level of competition as well, is always going to stand in good stead. He has done pretty well. I mean, 175 true pass sets. He's pretty much held things together for CJ Stroud for the last couple of years and enabled him to be a successful thrower of the ball. But in terms of who he is in that line, let me just peel back the curtain for you. The problem with centers this year is there's no Cam Jurgens. And there's no, what's his face? Oh, I forgot his name. How can I forget his name? Went to the Ravens.
Oh.
Thingy. Oh,
I hate yeah, I'm with you. I'm just looking it up now.
I hate having ADHD. I hate it.
I just can't remember any. Lindebaum.
Tyler Lindebaum, of course, yes. So there's no one of that caliber in this draft for me. But yeah, the good thing about Luke Whipler is that, like, while he's not the biggest or strongest, and his strength is the thing that he desperately needs to sort of work on, is that he is technically fundamentally sound. He's able to get out on the move, make blocks. He's an experienced zone blocker. Some experience of playing in a gap scheme as well. The only thing that is going to hold him back is, like, I will talk about arm length. It's short arms. It's 31 inches. It's the strength. It's the arms not being able to keep people off of his frame, and just the raw physical power of it. What you've actually got, though, is you've got a player who's explosive, who's quick. And while he's not athletically that gifted or powerful, can move. Decent explosive testing. 30.5 vert, which is not bad for a center. 29 reps on the bench, because obviously you just do. I think he was trying to prove a point there. There's a big difference being able to bench press 225 pounds 29 times and being able to move a one tech. One of them is going to hit you, and one of them is just going to sit there being a weight. But he projects to a guy who, if he can pack on 10, 15 pounds, just become a bit more functionally strong and a bit, you know, demonstrate a little bit more power on the interior, particularly holding his own against sort of like zero and one techs. He projects to being a starter down the road, and he's an interesting guy, so I quite like him. The floor with him is relatively low, and I'm fine with that. My number two center, John Michael Schmitz, again, opens up a lot. He is more of, for me, just a bit of a road grader. I mean, he started for four seasons on that Minnesota offensive line. So he's played with guys like Daniel Falele in that whole group, and he's blocked for, like, you know, Tanner Morgan for the 4 of the 17 years that Tanner Morgan's been playing quarterback there. so he's experienced that Golden Gophers offense is highly schemed, and it does kind of, it makes life easy for its offensive linemen. There's a lot of RPO and a lot of sort of like peak tempo stuff that they run that just simplifies everything for everybody. But Schmitz is, again, one of those guys who is fundamentally sound, but has relatively milquetoast physical sort of attributes. He's not even as explosive as Luke Whipler, but he's somebody who projects, again, to being kind of a depth guy initially. He may well develop into a starter, but for me, there's just not that kind of raw physical power to his game that you want to see in a guy that you would draft with the top 50 picks. He's not particularly, I mean, if he has any problems, it's like his ability to recover, his ability to deal with speed rushes as well. It's kind of, he's slow, he's clunky, he's a bit robotic, as well as being athletically limited, so that kind of holds him back a bit. But again, he's a guy who down the road could project to being a starter.
Yeah.
And then my number three center is Joe Tippmann of Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin is the state where, you know, Wisconsin and Iowa, I mean, literally, it's a farm for offensive linemen and big guys that like to chop down trees. Tippmann is probably the most physically impressive of them. He's 6'6", 317. And, like, he's the one out of that lineup of top three centers that you would look at and go, oh, yeah, him. because he's just a unit. And you know, that might mean a lot, but I don't know. With Tippmann, it's kind of, he's really quick as well. He's got all this sort of athletic pop. He can move, he can locate in space and deliver a blow on the move. He can kind of find linebackers and safeties and throw them out of the way. But he's just a bit sort of, With his pass pro, he has problems sorting through moves, stunts, and games, and he's kind of slow to react to it. If he's working in a pair to take away sort of someone coming from the outside and looping in, he doesn't recognize it as quickly as he might, and he gets caught out a bit. He can he's just like not very good at keeping guys off of his frame as well. Guys with like one or two decent moves, quick hands, can kind of body him very quickly. And just there's not a lot of sand in his pants either. He's like an upside down triangle, which is not what you want in an offensive lineman. What you guys want is a guy who's big and broad up top, but also kind of like has this sort of everything in the quads and kind of the glutes
You want tree
in
trunk
the area to
legs?
be.
Yeah.
You do because you really want someone who can just literally anchor down, put his feet in the floor with his legs and either stand his ground or put his feet in the floor and start driving forwards in the run game. And there's not he's not great at that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, that's a fundamental part thing that you actually need to do in terms of blocking, particularly in the NFL. So he's a guy who definitely needs to become a bit more sort of, again, is lacking in sort of power. For me, especially with the measurables.
And especially with an NFL where pass rush is coming from pretty much every angle now.
Yeah, and like I say, he has problems just processing and sifting through who's coming
Yeah.
sometimes, and it, and you know, he'll face a fair bit of that at the next level. I mean, spoiler alert, he will.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no question.
But again, he projects to be a depth guy who's going to need a year or two before I think he's really ready to start. I think if you threw him out there, it would be, I don't know. I don't know that he would necessarily be able to put his best foot forward, should we say. I
Yeah.
don't think any of them would really. I'm a little bit lower on the centre class than some people are. It's just because with centres, I like to see something that's truly special about them.
So
I either need to see elite athleticism, or I need to see real power. And no one on this team can really
the
give that.
modern NFL involves so many just incredibly wide defensive lines.
Yeah.
So, like, what you're wanting from your center is someone that can pick up anything from a 320-pound defensive tackle to like a 200-pound cornerback blitzing. So, like,
Yeah.
it's they need to have their wits about them a bit more than it's gone are the days when you can just rely on a left tackle to deal with the one great defensive player they've got on the other end. You
Absolutely.
need a full offensive line to deal with whatever schemes coming your way. So, and particularly
Yeah.
with a lot of the zone running as well, you need to make sure that you have a center that at least knows. Well, center sets absolutely everything. So, like, yeah,
Yeah.
I kind of agree as well. But I don't know a great deal about centers this year. So I'll take your word for it. Yeah.
It does come back down to that whole Dante Scarnecchia thing is are they tough enough? Are they smart enough? And are they just athletic enough?
Yeah.
And not one single one of them really for me ticks, even ticks two of the three boxes very emphatically. So, you know, it's an interesting checklist for me. Guards, however, do feel a little bit better at now.
Yeah.
Particularly if one of the tackles boost the guards. But anyway, I'll get to that later. But my number one guard at this precise moment in time is Osiris Torrance of Florida.
Okay.
So have you watched any of him?
I haven't, no.
He, you will watch him and you'll just go, oh yeah, he's clearly a guard at the next level, and he's clearly going to be okay. He's one of those players that you sort of look at, and he is always fundamentally in control of his arms and legs, is very rarely off balance, and is always in just the right position to kind of anchor down and hold his ground as a pass blocker. And in the run game is able to latch on and move people. It's like he's not the most sort of athletic, fluid or quick human being in the world. It's his lower body, his foot, his feet are just not quick, but they're just there and they anchor and they do move. But they're like, you know, it I mean, he's not a dancing bear, he's more sort of a stomping monster. But then this is a guard, you know, so this is kind of fun. But he
Just
can
watching him now.
absolutely get the hands on the frame. His hands are massive. They're 11 and a quarter inches, which is an A4 sheet of paper.
Yeah, that's bonkers.
So they sort of latch on and they just kind of move people or they stop people dead, which is kind of what you want. And so, and he's very rarely sort of physically out of position. My criticism is that kind of he's a bit stiff. He is a little bit stiff. I think speed rushes the next level, and people who are really good at shooting gaps would have an advantage against him, particularly if he struggles to sort of reset his hands as well, or sort of adjust to people moving laterally, you know, between him and another blocker. He may struggle there.
To put it into perspective, right? I'm currently watching him now, and it was, I didn't know what number he was, but he immediately stood out.
Yeah.
So yeah.
He's the big person throwing.
Yes. People. Yeah. Yeah, violent by the looks of things as well. Yeah.
And I think, you know, if you sort of let your eyes glaze over,
yeah,
you can spot. Actually, if you watch an offensive line,
yeah,
if you just let your eyes glaze over a little bit,
yeah,
and don't focus on detail, and you just focus on who's the biggest dude that's making the biggest mess.
Yeah, it is generally him.
You
isn't
then
it? Yeah.
Find who that the best player on that line really is, and then you sort of look at the detail from there. But yeah, he's just naturally physically strong human being who, you know, knows what he's doing in terms of like holding his own, standing his ground, and also moving forward and just obliterating human being.
Seems to just absolutely love contact as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he is born to play guard.
Mm.
He's born to do it. It's like literally, if you met him and he said, "I'm a sportsman," your first guess would be, "You play either D tackle or guard." And yeah, so I'm really high on him. The floor with him for me is very, very high.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, and just like the physical measurables, the 11 inch hands, you know, almost 34 inch arms, his 40 at that size, 5'3", 1, yeah, 23 reps on the bench. It's like, yep, I'm sold on everything to do with this human being at the very least average starter in the NFL.
Which is there are teams competing for a Super Bowl that would very much settle for an average starter on the offensive or the interior offensive line. So, yeah.
Yeah. The only problem for me is I just want to go up to him and ask him one day, exactly why did you jump at the combine? Because I think if you're going to put up a 23.5-inch vertical, just don't jump.
Yeah.
You know, if your broad's going to be 8'5", just don't jump. Just don't worry about it, mate. It's absolutely fine. We don't need to see you jump. We don't need to see a three cone either because you're a guard. But yeah, so he's very much a road grader, and you know, if it's a run heavy team, he's perfect.
Yeah.
Because he just loves hurting people. Again, on the subject of people who absolutely love hurting people, ladies and gentlemen, Steve Avila. So, again, he's not Quentin Nelson. You know, he's not even Osiris Torrance, but like, Steve Avila also is one of those guys who projects to be a good guard. He's not as fundamentally sound as Torrance. And there's some elements to his lower body cleaning up. He's not always got his feet under him. He's not always playing with like the proper anchor, but like at his size, he moves like he's 20 pounds lighter. And it's like he's just a huge, huge person. He's like, he enjoys physically being very physical with people, even though he's not quite as good at it as Osiris Torrance. The problem is, I don't think he's played against any particularly great pass rushers in his time at TCU with any great regularity. He's also just I mean, he's done some snaps at tackle, but they weren't particularly impressive. He's done seven starts at centre, so he does have some element of positional flexibility. But for me, it's not, he's not a special player, but again, he projects to be somebody who is potentially going to be a starting guard. I just think he's a slightly less refined and less fundamentally sound version of Osiris Torrance. For me, if he does have his feet in the ground and he is settled there in pass pro, though, no one really is going to move him. It's about getting the feet right. I think sometimes in space he struggles a bit. You know, locating, latching on, throwing people. He sometimes gets a bit lost, sometimes doesn't really realize where he is in relation to the defender, particularly if he's on the move and pulling, coming out from around that tackle and locating where that linebacker or safety that he's meant to be blocking and where they are. He sometimes loses them a bit, and when he does, and they finally do engage, he's sometimes off balance a bit, and I think that's going to show up more at the next level, where the guys he is off balance versus are bigger, stronger, faster. But I still feel okay. I think if you if you're in round two and you need a guard, anywhere from sort of picks 30 through to 50, Avila, I'd be amazed if he wasn't gone by pick 50. He's worth a shot. He's definitely worth a shot, and he tests more far more explosively than Torrance does as well. So there's a degree of upside there too. I mean, you know, it's 29.5 vertical, which is great. You know, a 40 at 5.21 at 300. I think what's he weighing at? 3.32, around 5.21. Smaller hands though. 9.25-inch hands, which are actually very small for a guard, but
It's just very small in general.
at the same time, if he can just get his lower body settled, I think he'll be very good to a good to very good guard in a few years' time. Okay, moving swiftly on. My number three guard, and I have only got three guards. Andrew Voorhees, ladies and gentlemen. Adrian Voorhees. So, anybody who has a surname that's named after a popular character from a horror
Was
franchise
going to say,
is probably immediately going to be very high on my list of offensive line prospects. Also, anybody with a chin that size, Google the face.
it's massive. You're not wrong.
It's enormous. 6'6", 325, according to USC Combine. He worked out being 6'6 and 3'10. Svelte by comparison. 32-inch arms, 10-inch hands. None of those an outlier for the position. 38 reps on the bench. 38 reps on the bench, which is nice.
That's
And his
impressive.
explosive, yeah, and his vertical and broad numbers are very good. So it points to him being an ex potentially an explosive athlete. He just. He's played for a really, really long time. Okay. He has got hundreds and hundreds of snaps
I know this
behind him.
guy now. I've just realized who it is, yeah.
The problem that worries me is that for all those snaps, his hands and his feet aren't always in rhythm. His hands don't always land when or where to get the maximum out of its physical strength, and his feet can be a little bit slow. He doesn't always get them under him, he doesn't always anchor very well, and he can sometimes be moved. Again, you can clean that up, it can be fixed. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to the Athletic podcast with Rob Havenstein and Mitchell Schwartz. Have you had a chance to listen to it? Yeah, if he goes to the right offensive line coach, I think a lot of what's wrong with him can easily be cleaned up. I feel good about the athlete. He's a little bit lanky and a little bit skinny for the position, but he just need if he can nail that sort of the balance and his hands and his feet being in sync, he could be very good. He could be a very good player, but as we've sort of
Two potential
learned.
problems. He's 24.
Yeah, and that does kind of add to the whole lack of development thing. Is this in terms of fundamentals, what all he's really capable of, or is it simply the fact that he hasn't met the right coach yet?
Secondly, he's going to miss most of his rookie season by the looks of things.
Oh yeah, of course. He tore his ACL at the combine, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
Oh, I know. I do remember now because he
Exactly,
was in
yeah.
the brace. He'd literally tore his ACL,
Yeah.
and within hours was doing 38 on the bench, which I might add is an absolute beast of a thing to
So
do.
he did that with a torn ACL.
Yeah, he's
Bonkers.
got the brace on when he does it. Yeah, and it's just like, yeah. I mean, mad respect, and you know, there are offensive linemen in the NFL who are going, you know what, he's fine. He can come to my camp any day because, like, you know, that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, you're like, oh, you're the dude that did 38 reps with the torn ACL. Oh yeah, hello, welcome. We like you. So yeah, I think he did himself a lot of favors that day. I'd like to hope he didn't harm his knee in any way either. That would be a dumb thing to do. But yeah, it's just like the feet. And just the feet and the hands, it needs to be in sync more before he can really sort of solidify himself as any kind of like starter in the NFL. So, I will say that for all I've talked about guards, I'm now going to get onto my tackles. And the first player I do want to talk about at tackle is definitely the best offensive lineman in the draft. It's just whether he's a tackle or not. Pete Skoronski.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Have you watched Skoronski?
I have, yes.
Thoughts?
Well, I want him to be a Chicago Bear. Let me put it that way. If
Yeah,
Jalen
really good.
Carter's not available, then Skoronski's the guy I want. I don't want a wide receiver. I want someone that's going to keep Justin Fields upright, and Skoronski stands the best chance of actually doing that, I think.
Yeah, he's really good. It's another really good Northwestern offensive lineman.
Yeah, he looks like such a Northwestern offensive lineman as well.
I know. Again, strong chin.
Yes, absolutely,
Strong chin, tiny eyes. They're like little dots drawn on his head. So he kind of. He walked it. So Rashawn Slater leaves. Skoronski replaces him. I mean, it's big shoes to fill. And he's not Rashawn Slater. He is not. Let's get this out of the way. Trust me.
Absolutely.
He's not got that upper body strength and that mad balance and that mad recovery ability. Okay. But technically, fundamentally spot on. Everything is balanced. It's controlled. The hands shoot at the right time. They land. They land. It's power. I just he pass sets in controlled, nimble, controlled way. Doesn't overset very much. You know, is good at sort of recovering on counter moves, kind of, and just it's just endless good reps after good reps, and it's just a consistent thing. The things that will hold Skoronski back. He is not phenomenally strong. He's just like, you know, he's above average for the class in terms of physical strength and power that he can generate. He's not a plus athlete. And his arms are a little short. So, you know, he doesn't meet the arm threshold. So, I mean, you know, there is the thing, if you can play tackle, you can play tackle. Okay, so I would say that he should absolutely be drafted as a tackle. He should absolutely be given an opportunity to play tackle. Absolutely. Okay, he's earned that right. The film is strong enough that I would say that you could give it a go. I would not dismiss him having the potential to be a good starting tackle.
So, chances are he's going to be a top 10 pick. If you're picking in the top 10, you're either fluked into it like the Eagles, or you're a team that needs help.
The
So,
only
like,
problem is, the arm threshold is real. So he it does automatically erase him like 15, 20 boards. That's the shame. Unless he were a god. In
Yeah.
which case, you know, he would be someone that would be a guy you would draft in round one as a god. And if he were a god, I would rank him above Osiris Torrance as a god.
Yeah.
But I think he deserves, he has earned the right to be drafted as and given a go.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because while his measurables are not elite for a guard, for tackle, his bench and his explosive testing is.
Yeah.
So 34.5 vertical, 9 foot 7 broad, which is good for a tackle. It's really good for a tackle, you know. 30 on the bench, but then, you know, all offensive linemen lift, so the bench isn't really all that meaningful. It's just if he can get either a little bit stronger or his arms can stretch, you don't question it. But what he would have is, regardless of whether he becomes a tackle or a guard at the next level, he will have that Elijah Vera Tucker versatility whereby you could have a guard who could play tackle at a pinch and handle his shit.
Yeah. Which
You
I
know?
think is underrated. Because the amount of NFL teams you see where the tackle goes down injured and you're like, well, that's the season probably done.
Yeah, but all the Jets did was like, oh yeah,
Yeah.
Elijah, you've played left tackle.
Yeah.
You've stymied Kayvon Thibodeau at left tackle. Do you fancy moving to tackle for a bit for us? Yeah, no, totally, mate. It's all good. And like, if you can get draft somebody that has that, then his value as a guard is actually quite high.
Yeah.
So it's why I was high on Elijah Vera Tucker, and that's why I am high on Skoronski. It's just when someone is just endlessly, unflinchingly, consistently very good,
I
you should
think
trust that.
so with offensive line, there's the old adage that is you're just picking your five best players, regardless. Skoronski would become probably on most NFL teams one of the five best players on that offensive line. So, like,
Finding where he goes.
yeah, so it doesn't really matter whether he's playing guard or whether he's playing tackle. It's about finding where everyone's going to go anyway from those five players. So, yeah.
Exactly. So, for me, to not let him take some reps at tackle and see how it goes, I think that's a misstep. I think you need to see how it goes and then move, look at guard. But if he were a guard, I mean, the fact that he played snaps at tackle and the amount of quality snaps at tackle he had,
Yeah.
just sell him as a guard. There would be, I think, I don't think there's a single team in the NFL that would say no to it.
Yeah.
And I think that if he does play guard at the next level, I think he'll be an excellent guard.
I think you've got to do your due diligence though. Like, try it out, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. At least you tried. Like, there's no harm in at least, you know, putting a bit of effort in to see if it would work.
I he is the offensive lineman I see where there is probably the least margin for failure.
Yeah.
Because it's just, look, if I see 3 years of consistently really good, I trust it.
Yeah.
Particularly a position like that where you are basically on your own. If I
Yeah.
see 3 years of consistently good from a corner, maybe they're just really good. It's the same concept. Maybe they're
Yeah.
just really good. So yeah, I feel good about Skoronski. The rest of the tackles kind of sorted themselves out quite nicely for me. So my next one is Ohio State's Paris Johnson.
Yeah, I like this guy as well.
He's good.
Yeah.
Like him too. Different reasons. So what were your thoughts on Paris Johnson?
The offensive line, I it's one of those ones that I would like to then sit down and watch in slow motion. I haven't done that. like
you should. You should always watch them.
Absolutely, and that's why I can't really say too much. But he, for starters, he definitely seems like more of a tackle. Let's start with that. Whereas Skoronski, totally. If Skoronski is going to potentially play guard, like you'd want to potentially draft Paris Johnson and Skoronski one after the other, and then you've got a pretty decent one side of an offensive line there. He just looks like, of what I've seen, the most solid actual tackle in this draft, the one that you could trust to not just give up plays, give up massive plays. And I think for what I've seen of the offensive line in this year, you're not necessarily looking for game winners. You're looking for people that aren't going to lose games.
Exactly.
And he is possibly the best person that won't lose you the game at tackle this year's draft. That would be what I would say of what I've kind of seen of him.
Yeah.
And I think you could do a lot worse than have it. Offensive line runner expensive. So if you can get someone that is going to do you, it's going to be an upgrade at the cost of like a rookie, then I think you go for it. And that's where I think, although there are better offensive linemen in the league at the moment, and there's probably better offensive linemen that are available.
Yeah.
He's a cheaper option. And he could become very, very good as well.
So he's relatively inexperienced. I think he's had one season at tackle.
Yeah.
He was previously a guard.
Yeah.
Which makes actually the season that he's had quite impressive. I mean, it's what? I think it's 14 pressures, 2 sacks, which in your first season starting at not even right tackle, but left tackle. It's like, it's just, I mean, it's phenomenal, really. So for me, I look at like the physical measurables for him, and it's like every box is just ticked. You look at the height, and the height to weight, so it's what, 6'6", 3'10". And the arms, they are, look, so it's like, I think 19 tackles have measured with arms longer than 36 inches since 2000.
Oh, this was on The Athletic as well, wasn't it? Yes, I remember this.
Yeah. So he's got enormous arms. The arms are just enormous. So, and when they're that long, they really are an advantage, because it's just like, it's an extra 3 inches to keep it right off your frame. So immediately that places him at an advantage and places his opponent at a disadvantage. He is nimble. He's just athletic, smooth. He's just got a really good kick step. His feet are really, really sweet. He's a dancing bear. And that's why he isn't a guard.
Yeah.
But the dancing feet are also a bit of a problem. I think sometimes he again suffers from a similar problem. He doesn't always time anchoring his feet, if that makes sense.
Which means he's going to get knocked on his ass an awful lot then.
A bit tippy-tappy. He needs to sort that out. It's like, yeah, sometimes tackles get a bit crazy and weird with their kick steps, and sometimes you just don't need to. Sometimes it's just literally, you know, 1-2 kicks, and yeah, that's all really. Don't overthink it. I think sometimes he does that a little bit, but he would be the one who, if he'd had probably a few more reps at left tackle as a collegiate player, would be somebody who developed a bit more, would be potentially drafted more highly, because the physical tools are absolutely there for him to actually develop into being a very, very good perennial Pro Bowl style tackle.
I think, I mean, as a Bears fan, I think he's the guy they want. Because I think that's why they're looking at potentially moving down, even if it's just a few places.
Yeah.
Like moving down to 12 or 13, basically, I think. And I think, I think that's something that they're definitely looking into, it, because they're seeing if they can coax the Texans to move up, which would be hilarious.
The right coach will absolutely maximize that dude. And because the potential for him is a perennial Pro Bowl.
Yeah, agreed.
For me, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So moving swiftly on, ladies and gentlemen, Broderick Jones, Georgia Bulldogs. So, he does have sand in his pants. Big butt, huge quads, awesome, love it, fantastic. He is like wide. He is 6'4". I think he's like 310, 315. He looks like he's 330. He's huge. Arms 34 inches tick, hands 10.6 tick. His 40 was sub 5 seconds at 310, so he's
That's
clearly
bonkers. Yeah.
speedy dude. The explosive testing was okay. He again is another physical, toolsy human being who just needs to work on his fundamentals, particularly with his hands. But he has got some power, and it comes from down below. It's guttural, and it comes up through his body. And when he lands punch, it's over. It's done. He is absolutely someone who projects to being a good tackle. The athletic profile's all there. I also think he would potentially be somebody who would translate to being very, very
Yeah.
guard as well, just because of the power. He's the one who, again, he has a pretty, the ceiling is there. It's just his lack of experience too. He probably needs another year, I think, to really prove himself. But I think this is a decent year for him to come out, and I think he's going to be fine. He's someone who, if you draft him in round one, I don't think it's a waste. I think he projects to being someone who could potentially down the road be a Pro Bowl player. So I'm pretty decent on him. At four, I had Darnell Wright. Now, some people aren't that high on Darnell Wright. Some people are. Some people are just wary of Tennessee players in general. But I actually think, I think people are unnecessarily low on him. I really, really like him. Again, he's a strong human being, and I've come around more to the raw strength and size thing in terms of offensive linemen, because if you have that, you're more likely to survive early. 6'6", 335. He's a unit. He is a huge person. What I think it was 8 pressures this season, 0 sacks allowed, which is amazing.
That is impressive.
Nearly 3,000 snaps at left and right, so he's done both. He had a very good game against Will Anderson. He's one of the few guys who like went toe to toe with the dude and was like, "No, you are not converting speed to power against me." Will Anderson gets those hands into that frame, and they're just absorbed like he's made of sand. It's like, no, let's not do this, Will. Let's try a different dance here. He has some balance issues, I think, and sometimes he can overset a bit, and sometimes he can get caught sort of bending at the waist and leaning. So, savvy rushers who know how to use it, a big person's body weight against them, slip him a bit. We saw that a little bit at the senior bowl, some of the reps where some of the quicker rushers kind of almost had his number. But I like him. Again, he's somebody who, back end of round one, front end of round two, is someone that you can sort of buy into. Again, it's feet. This class is full of guys who haven't got great feet or need to do something with their feet. But he's cool. He's cool. And I think he's also a guy that if he doesn't make it a tackle, I mean, you could just, he's literally got guard written all over him as well. But again, he's someone you want to try at tackle just because he is this, just this athletic unit of a human who's shown that he can do it against high level players in the SEC, like Will Anderson. And that, so I don't really, I'm not worried or concerned about him beyond his feet. Again, measurables. His 40 at his size is phenomenal. At 6'5 and 333, he ran a 5.01. That's fast.
Is fast.
So, that, and a broad of 9'6 is really good at that size. A vertical 29 at that size is epic. He tested every single way absolutely brilliantly, except for one thing. Do you know what it is?
Was that?
Kenny Pickett hands. Kenny Pickett hands! Not quite. Kenny Pickett's are 8 3/4. Darnell Wright's a 9. So,
That's pretty close, though.
they are small hands. In fact, with how long his arms are and how small his hands are, I'm amazed he can actually see them if he holds them out in front of him. But yeah.
Oh, I just thought they were far away.
Yeah, I thought I left them in the other room. No. So yeah, I like him. I think that there are some teams that will probably have him number one on their board as well, just because of the size profile as well, just because he is so enormous and so physically strong, like, you know, power incarnate. And that does float with some teams. It really, really does. It holds a lot more weight with some teams than others, particularly, you know, if you run a lot of gap scheme and things like that, it's kind of much easier to find guys because you're not relying on those athletic dudes. You can do it in space, locate, latch on, and throw relying backers. You're just relying on guys who can literally move piles. I mean, that's oversimplified, you know. So yeah, Darnell Wright. I think there were some other guys that I quite liked. That all had their limitations. Anton Harrison of Oklahoma. The problem with like judging anybody from the Oklahoma offense is the kind of how schemed it is and what that Oklahoma offense is. There's not a lot of true pass sets, and it's kind of what you're more projecting about is the athlete. So there is an element of risk there. There are some people who will think he's a fringe first rounder, some people who think he's a round two guy for that reason. I think he's smooth, okay? And like, again, it's endless reps of, I'm quite good at my job, you know? The thing for me is that he is not athletically spectacular in like anything that's to do with strength. It's like, and that shows up. I mean, it's the really good things about him. His explosive testing's good, a 40-yard dash, 4.98, and he is like, he's an okay athlete, but it's the power, and particularly with the frame as well. So you would look at somebody who's 6'5" and 315, and you look at the power that he does or does not generate, and there's questions there. But then we kind of thought the same thing about Charles Cross as well. And look how wrong we were about him.
Yep, that's fair.
Not to say they're the same guy or it's going to work out the same way, or they're going to get the same coaching. But he is smooth. He has the potential to be very, very good. Left and right hand are good as well. It's like, you know, he's not a two-hand lifter, anything like that. He doesn't try and forklift people. So, you know, the hands and the feet all work independently and work really, really well. It's the strength and conditioning. And it's just like, how good is his upside in the run game? He's a bit more of a question for me. He's more of a sort of easily projectable version of another guy I quite like, which was Cody Mock of North Dakota State. A man of limited teeth, by choice.
What?
By choice. No, he's chosen not to get them replaced.
Oh, fair enough.
It's just his choice. It's his thing.
I mean, I say fair enough, but still.
Long flowing ginger hair and missing teeth. Which is fine.
Hero.
I mean, yeah. He's an interesting athlete. He's 6'6", 303. He's a converted tight end. He was 221 pounds when he walked onto campus 3 years ago, and he's literally gained nearly 90 pounds in 3 years. But like of good weight, not of burger weight, but like good weight. He's an older player as well, and he's played against FCS competition. What you're buying into him, with him, is the fact that he is like an athlete, and in space he just can move and find people. He is very enthusiastic. He wants to destroy people. Wants to humiliate them. It's just the arms are short and he is light, which gives you some questions about the sort of strength and power thing. The same concerns that I had with the other tackle that came out of NDSU, the one that plays for the Titans. I can't remember his name. Oh, it's gone. It's so annoying. Drafted 2021. What was his name? It'll come to me later, but yeah.
Sorry, go repeat that.
The NDSU tackle, Dylan Ravens.
Yeah.
Same sort of problem. He's undersized like Ravens. He's not quite as refined as Ravens was. And there's a lot of development there, but he's somebody who you get him on a roster and you can try him at tackle or guard. You can bet on the athlete. He'll develop into something.
It feels like there's a guy like this, or maybe like two, a handful of guys like this every year who come into the league and are immediately a swing tackle, basically, or just immediately someone that comes in and just is immediately a backup. Like, and they always stick around for years as well. So, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being an interior lineman down the road. But, you know, at his size, he did a 7.3 second 3 time, which is good. That's good at that size.
That's insane.
5.08 40, 29 reps on the bench. His jumps were great. It's the arms, 32.3 inches, hands at 9.75. He's not got big forks on him.
No.
So yeah, that was kind of the class. I quite like Matt Bergeron, but again, he's a kind of swing tackle candidate for me. I wasn't massively high on him, but I think there's a lot of guys in this class who project to being guys who kind of develop into starters because of their technical ability or because of their raw physical tools. In fact, there's a lot of toolsy guys at tackles who just need a couple of things to fall into place for them, and they could be really, really good. But yeah, my overarching opinion is that of all the offensive linemen here, Skoronski is the one who, if I had to throw one of them on an NFL field tomorrow, Skoronski would be the guy who would swim.
Skoronski stands out. Like, of the limited ones I've seen, Skoronski is the one that just kind of looks like, as you say, like you could throw him onto an NFL field and he probably would swim. Probably not a mixed metaphor from me there, but like it's he looks like he'd do okay.
He'd hang in there. He probably wouldn't be very good, but he'd hang in there. The rest of them, I don't know. They would need a camp. But yeah, I feel good about Skoronski and where we are with him. So yeah, that's the offensive line class, basically, for me. It's been very lonely without Will. I miss you, Will.
Yeah,
Come
we'll come
back
back
to me.
next year. Next year, definitely.
Next year, though. Next year, though. Because next year's going to be even better, I think. Pretty sure it is, in fact, actually. I've had a quick next year it is. So, what's the next position, Dan?
Quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, we finally get to quarterbacks.
Is there anyone coming out this year, James?
I mean, it's, yeah.
It's really, really interesting this year.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, like really interesting. It's weird, is what it is this year. Because you know who I trust? None of them.
Yeah.
But
So
at the same time,
I
they're all
have,
good.
they all have something that I innately trust about them,
Yes.
but then they also have something that makes me worry.
Yeah.
So, how do we want to do this? We want to just start with number one, or do we
Go
want
for it,
to?
yeah.
Okay. So, the best for me, the best quarterback in the class is Bryce Young.
Yeah.
He is the best quarterback. If they were all 6'3" and all 215 pounds,
Yeah.
they all had the exact same measurables,
Yeah.
Bryce Young would be the best quarterback. Here's why. Of all the quarterbacks in this class, no one has a better and more refined sense of what is going on the field at any given time than Bryce Young. That's in and out of structure. That trait is reminiscent of who? Say his name,
I don't
say it.
want to. No, don't make me say.
It's the key trait in one Patrick Mahomes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Because the tools of Patrick Mahomes, right, they're fantastic,
So.
wasn't aligned with his innate sense of where he is in the field and what is happening around him,
Yeah.
it wouldn't be as good. The genius of Pat Mahomes is not the arm or the athlete, it's the brain. and the understanding of where he is.
Hmm.
Bryce Young has that to a less developed degree, but to a degree that for his age and experience is remarkable.
His pocket presence is next level. There are quarterbacks in the NFL that would kill to have that kind of like sixth sense, like spider sense of like he just moves out the way at the exact right time to like chip and run. He sells it so well. What I don't think he has is that when Patrick Mahomes does that, breaks to run, gets to the baseline, and then just like, now I'm going to chuck it. Bryce Young doesn't really have that. He runs along like parallel with the line for a bit and then either gets clattered or then tries and breaks to run. I don't think he was helped by his receivers, though. I might be wrong on this. Like what I've seen.
He has a highlight reel of if you look at all the Alabama receivers' drops for last year, half of them you're going, wow, it's a shame that was dropped. Because one of my favorite Bryce Young throws is a drop. It's dropped by the receiver. He is literally running. There's an open, he's about to be hit in the open field by the edge defender, and he literally shakes and bakes the edge defender, nearly snaps his ankles, throws across his body, hits the receiver in the chest, and just bounces right off. And you're just like, really? And there's endless results, endless examples of him hitting his receivers and delivering them catchable balls, and they just, for whatever reason, just don't catch them. He, yeah.
What I kind of love about him is that nearly every rookie quarterback you put into a simplified offense in the first year anyway. And I think when you do that, he is going to absolutely shine. Because he'll be in a simplified offense and relying pretty much on his natural talent. But he is smart enough to know how to run the offense from day one, pretty much anyway.
He is an absolute savant. He calling protections, killing plays, changing protections, the whole lot.
He sees the whole field. He's
Sight,
he's yeah.
and sight adjusts, full field reads, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
It's there, in structure and out of structure. He is the best of all these quarterbacks in terms of on-field processing, which, as a rookie, is priceless. The last guy I saw with this good on-field processing drafted was Joe Burrow. On-field processing. That's how I feel. I don't have concerns about his arm strength either. It's above average.
It's fine. It's fine. Slight concerns about how quickly the processing then takes to actually react and do something about it. That's the only thing. The first thing I had to get my head round, and this is not meant with any sense of humor at all, is that he kind of looks weird with the ball. So everything for some reason looks a little bit slower. But I think it's just because it's like, well, he's much smaller than say Patrick Mahomes is. And like seeing someone that small throw the ball's quite weird. But I do think there is like a slight processing that something's happening. I think there were times when he missed his receiver by like a tick, basically. That he processed knew exactly what he wanted to do, but then it was a case of actually getting his body to do what it is he wanted to do. And I think there is also times when where he's been looking off safeties that he gives it too long once he's finished. Like if once he's found the receiver that he actually wants to throw to, it's like look off safety, look off safety. Look at court, look at the receiver that I'm going to throw to, then throw the ball, rather than one fluid motion. But he's a rookie, and I'm being overly picky. But yeah.
No, it's fair. The favorite things about him, though, things like in the red zone, tight windows, he will find a way in a muddy pocket, in a tight window situation, to fit a ball in a way that you're not expecting, in the way that like all these creative playmakers like Pat Mahomes or Joe Burrow will do,
Yeah.
just because of his innate field awareness of where he is and where his guys are. He's a guy who will throw a ball a certain way to
Yeah.
throw a guy open as well. That's a Joe Burrow thing. That's a
Yeah.
and when you see rookies doing that and demonstrating over and over again, it tells you that they have an understanding of where the ball really needs to be. And sometimes when you go from college to pros, you have to teach these guys that he's not open, you need to throw the ball so he can become open. So,
Yeah.
you lead him at the helmet 2 yards in front. He'll be open if you do that. Do anything else? No. He clearly understands that already.
Love seeing him with a really smart receiver as well, like who kind of is on the same wavelength as him.
Exactly. Rather than the guys he had this year at Bama, who wasn't
Oh.
great. I mean, his best receiver was Cameron Latu, and Cameron Latu is, draftable tight end, not great. So yeah, in terms of like the quarterback, no problem. Nailed down the top 5 pick any year you want. The size. There's
But
one problem. There's one thing about the
wait,
size.
James, he's 205 pounds.
Okay. The only problem with the size is his drops are deeper. They're a bit deeper. So because and then that is a size thing. So it does put a little bit more strain on your tackles because your tackles have to set deeper, which makes them more susceptible to inside moves. Your pocket is spread more thinly. He's a very good mover in and out structure. Really good at stepping up into the pocket and sifting through and finding not just side moving sideways out of the pocket, but moving upwards out of the pocket. So there's that mitigation there.
That's one of my favorite moves as well. I think that takes some balls to do as well. Yeah, I agree.
It does, and it takes vision, and
Yeah.
you have to have good field vision and to be able to layer the ball
Yeah, to understand
as
that you're not
well.
gonna you're not stepping straight into a defender as
Yeah,
well, so yeah.
because and it sounds awful to say this, but it's much, much easier to roll out to your right and throw on the run than it is to step up in a muddy pocket and try and layer the ball into a tight window when the space is only getting smaller. And your decision time about whether you throw or run is actually disappearing far more quickly. It's denser and more confusing.
That's the one. The other thing as well, he completely changed the launch point like on several occasions of like, and that
Exactly.
worked, and it really, really worked. So yeah.
He will need, but they will need to sort of work out what they do with the offensive line at the next level in terms of what they teach that line to do and how to protect the quarterback like that, because you don't just your pockets are different. It's not a prohibitive thing, but you do have to sort of scheme your line to do things slightly differently to compensate and allow for it. But that's not unusual. I expect it's the same sort of thing that we'd have to do for Lamar Jackson, the same sort of thing that Andy Reid coaches the linemen to do at Kansas City. Be aware he will move.
So this is interesting. He's almost certainly going to the Carolina Panthers, right?
That's the idea.
Yeah. Adam Thielen now looks like a really nice pickup.
I think, it does. It does. Absolutely does. The only really big issue I have with the size is just durability. He won't play at 205. He won't play at 205.
No,
He'll play
nowhere
at
near.
190, 195.
I try so hard to like. I have been his biggest. I don't really care about the size guy. Like since we even started talking about since the season finished, basically. At the same time, I cannot help but remember Pat White just getting absolutely annihilated by the Baltimore Ravens. Now it's different. Obviously, it's different, and the NFL is different. Quarterbacks are much more protected than they were. At the same time, as soon as he tucks and runs. Like this isn't college. If he's going to get hit, he's going to get hit hard. It's a concern, but is it any more of a concern? Like, at what point is it more concerning than, say, Lamar Jackson tucking and running? Like, people are going to get hurt out in the open field. That's all.
Double-edged sword. We even saw it kind of catch up with Pat Mahomes as well.
Yeah.
But then, even with a bum ankle, he's still incredible. There you are. So yeah, that's my thoughts on Bryce Young. I think if all things were equal with measurables, he would be the best quarterback. Number two quarterback is, and it's predictable and boring, but it is CJ Stroud for me. I think
Yeah.
he it's a real shame, actually, because I think CJ Stroud, had he come out last year, had he been eligible last year, would have shone like an absolute beacon
Yeah.
as a quarterback. I think because of the class he's in, he doesn't. Because there's so much talk about how much of an outlier Bryce Young is, or how much talk about how much of an incredible athletic outlier Anthony Richardson is, more on that in a minute, or the enigma that is, Will Levis, and also the enigma that is Hendon Hooker. Being the guy who's just a good quarterback,
I know, right? It's
it is just the worst thing in the world for him, because it's like you hardly talk, people hardly talking about him.
yeah.
And then he turns up to the combine, and what was it? I think it was Dane Brugler that said, normally, you watch the throwing at the combine and you're just looking to have some stuff confirmed for you. And he said, I watched CJ Stroud and it was confirmed for me and more. That's one of the smoothest throwers I've ever seen in my life. And I would agree. He has a just so easy, so natural, so smooth, just getting the ball out of his hands accurately, timing, pace, touch. And I watched in that same passing display, I witnessed Anthony Richardson launch and go. I was just listening to the air being sucked out of the stadium. But then I was watching CJ Stroud do the same thing, and it was on an arc. Beautiful. They were like laser guided missiles, and they were going 60, 65 yards. And no one really did anything. I was like, are you guys not seeing this? He's doing the same thing that Anthony just did, but better. Like, the arc's better. It's more accurate. It's placed better. The guy is not having to adjust on the ball. And then just he footwork as well. Just the way he sets his feet, plants his feet. His fundamentals are so solid and perfect and just great, And then you look at the production as well, and just like he's really good at limiting like turnovers. He's really good at sort of clocking up and racking up yards, and he's had the benefit of like four of the best collegiate receivers of the last 10 years, admittedly, but he's had Chris Olave, he's had Garrett Wilson, he's had Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and the best of all of them, Marvin Harrison Jr. It's just like, but at the same time, he's still got to throw them the ball. And in 2 seasons, he's thrown 85 touchdowns and 12 picks. But he's just glossed over. He's thrown for like 8,000 yards as well, at like nearly 10 yards per attempt. His completion percentage is at like nearly 70 over that 2 year span. But we ding him because he's just good. He's just good at almost all of it. And like, I get the knocks. The knocks are he isn't that much of a creator out of structure. But did you see the Georgia game? Yeah, he pulled it out. He pulled out some stuff that was just like, oh, you can do it. And oh, you are actually good at it as well. I was like, okay, a bit more of this. This is fine. But he is a bit static in the pocket, and he isn't naturally hasn't naturally been that guy. Also, I think the Ryan Day offense, the quarterbacks that have come from that offense, the Dwayne Haskins, the Justin Fields, give people pause. I think with Justin Fields, the pause is about how NFL ready he wasn't.
Yeah, because
Not how good he is.
he came out and the talk was that he could launch a ball 60 yards downfield. and run a competent offense. And what it actually turns out is he's just unreal with his legs. And that's not why the Bears drafted Justin Fields. But it turns out that he, as an actual passer, he still needs an awful lot of work. So, not to say he won't get there, but yeah.
Oh, no, I think Justin Fields will absolutely get there.
Yeah, I do as well.
Don't think he will or idiots, personally. No. Just opinion. But they are idiots. But, like, he's just... He does good quarterback things.
Yeah.
The only concern is that, like, the one, you know, 2 meter wide exhaust port for him is how is he going to cope in muddy pockets and under pressure? Because he didn't have an awful lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, he had the one Jones and, like, Paris Johnson. You know?
Do we think that... So for me, I'd really want... If we're assuming that Bryce Young's going number one, number two is going to be the Texans, and they don't seem to be in love with CJ Stroud, so they're going to try and trade out. No one's going to trade with the Texans, by the way, because everyone knows that now.
The rumor is that the Texans are happy to stand pat at two and not take a QB.
Yeah, and take Will Anderson instead. But and then at number three, if I'm the Raiders, and Stroud's quite obviously there, I'm kind of thinking that's the kind of reliable guy that I need to then just ignite the surrounding talent that they have on these rosters anyway. It's just kind of a thought, but like,
yeah,
I mean, they've got Jimmy G, admittedly.
Don't discount teams like Seattle.
Yeah,
do not
true.
Discount the Titans.
No, the Titans.
Would want to move on.
But I'm just thinking the Raiders with Devontae Adams, Jacoby Myers, Hunter Renfro.
What a place to land.
Yeah, and Josh Jacobs.
And he's the kind of quarterback that Josh McDaniels would love.
Exactly. That's kind of my...
all the good quarterback things. In fact, he is Jarrett Stidham turned up to 11.
Can we also, I've just realised this on the Raiders roster, can we take a moment to enjoy the fact that the Raiders running back is Josh Jacobs and... Yes. Their fullback's Jacob Johnson.
Okay, we've enjoyed that.
It's just a lot of fun names there, that's all. I think that would be a really fun landing spot. Because as much as I think Jimmy Garoppolo's was a fine choice in the absence of Derek Carr, but why not try something a bit different? Like you've got your offensive pieces, your defense is, well, rubbish. But like, why not try and ignite the offense and pick up someone like CJ Stroud and see if that'll work?
Absolutely.
But Seattle as well, I think, is a really nice potential landing spot.
So while we're here,
yeah,
there are three players, right?
Yeah.
Who I personally, if you were to take them one overall,
yeah,
I have zero problem.
Yeah.
And that's Bryce Young.
Yeah.
CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
And the next guy.
Yeah.
If you take the next guy number one overall, I totally understand.
Me too.
A very different reason. So we go from a guy who is pretty much there as an NFL player, NFL quarterback, ticks all the boxes, to a guy who could be special.
Yeah.
Anthony Richardson.
Yeah. So
could be special.
I am gradually swinging around to this idea that if that guy's available in the draft, you might want to go for him. Mm. Because if it doesn't work, fine, you move on, you pick whoever is next. But if it does work, it's Patrick Mahomes. And that's an exaggeration. It's Patrick Mahomes, it's Josh Allen. Yeah. It's a good quarterback if it works. It's a really good quarterback if it works. If it doesn't, no one really cares. You tried it, you move on, whatever. But if it does work, it's really, really special. Yeah. So,
we just need to think about a few things.
Yeah.
So he is, in terms of athletic profile, about as perfect as you could imagine. In
Yeah.
fact, he is beyond what you would perceive as perfect, because you couldn't conceive a quarterback being able to do all of these things. The same way we couldn't with Cam. In some ways, his athletic testing is superior to Cam's,
Yeah.
especially the speed and the explosive testing. A quarterback can jump 40 inches vertically and nearly 11 feet in a broad, run a 4.43 at 6'4" and nearly 250 pounds. If you think about that just as a runner, what that is, that's difficult to bring down. That's difficult to run with. And then you look at the quarterback. Now,
Yeah.
there are throws on his film where you just scratch your head and you're like, what on earth happened
Yeah.
that you would miss like that? Or what happened there? And then you watch it back and you think, well, what's he trying to do here? And you sort of like, oh, I understand what he's trying to do. He's trying to throw this ball on time to this person. And it's missed because his feet aren't properly set,
Yeah.
or he's put too much on it.
Yeah.
You see him take the snap. You see plays develop. And you think, well, if I'm right, you're meant to read that, then that, then that. And how his helmet's moving like that, so he's clearly reading it correctly. So he's looking, he's seeing, and then you'll see him identify the right throw. And sometimes it will miss, and sometimes it will land. So you can see him trying to do all the things he's been coached to do. That's a tick, okay? Like, people compare him to Josh Allen. You didn't see that with Josh Allen. You just saw, wow, okay, Josh, yeah, whatever. But with Anthony Richardson, you see the cogs turning. You see the whole sort of, oh, I see what you're trying to do. You just aren't experienced. You haven't done it enough. You know? He's also got this thing where he desperately needs to be taught how to put some touch on the ball and just adjust the pace of his
Yeah,
throws.
you can't just
Because
wang at your receivers, can you? Just
if someone's running a 5 yard, a 3 step slant, you can't just drive it in there, because it will just come bouncing off their face, which happens with
Yeah.
alarming regularity with him. It's like he has one speed that he throws at, and it is that speed. It's like 80 mile an hour fastball, and it's really hard on receivers. He plays like a guy who knows what he's doing, but just has to have the repetitions to nail it. It's the muscle memory. It's the and just having enough reps under his belt to actually get settled. And I think that's the key thing. He has to have that repetition and get those reps in quick and early to develop. Particularly in his lower body, his mechanics in the lower body are just all over the shop. But once he sets his feet, he's accurate. It's just he needs to get those feet working. You can fix the lower body. You can,
That
well, I wouldn't say you can fix it, but you can definitely do more with the lower body than you can.
This sounds reminiscent of another quarterback that came out in the last 6 years that
Who?
we were talking about the mechanics being an absolute mess.
Yeah, who's that?
Patrick
Yeah. Yeah, it turns out his mechanics
Mahomes.
weren't a mess because we thought it was a mess, but what we didn't know is because Mahomes was his weird funky mechanics actually were completions. With Richardson, his funky mechanics are the cause of his accuracy issues. And they're quite, I don't think he will ever be a guy that has like 64, 65% completion. He'll probably more hover around 60, 60, 50, 59 to 61. You know, but that's fine because of the special athlete, the special upside as a runner, the immense potential that arm has, if particularly if you can learn to adjust the throw's pace and touch,
Even
and the fact
if
that, yeah.
the thought of like a home run throw means that he's getting first downs with his legs, then because safeties have to drop back, and
But
all of a
that will be
sudden,
how he
yeah.
survives early. That will be how he
Absolutely.
survives early on. He will literally, his career arc, his first season will be very much probably like Deshaun Watson's first season.
Yeah, well, that's Deshaun Watson, that's Josh Allen as well, while we're at it. And
Yeah.
that is also Justin Fields as well.
I think,
Yeah.
yeah, he needs the right coach. I think the perfect quarterback coach for him actually sits at number one overall. I think the perfect landing spot for him would be Carolina
I just don't see it.
because of the guy that's there, but it's not going to happen. I think that
If I'm
you factor,
Atlanta, right?
yeah.
If I'm Atlanta, I'm thinking, let's do it. Let's just do it. Let's just go for it. Come on. Let's put out the funkiest offense in the world with Cordarrelle Patterson, with Drake London and Kyle Pitts and Anthony Richardson. And let's just keep them guessing the whole game as to what we're actually going to do with the ball.
And just have defense there permanently with that. Nope, not a clue. Face.
Yeah.
Not a clue. Not a clue. But yeah, you do, you do, you want to bank on him being somebody who can, with the reps, develop in a linear fashion. And if he can, he could be a very special player. Very special indeed. And I would bet on it. It's not a Jamarcus Russell bet. It's not even a Josh Allen bet. It's more of a sort of, it's just, it's a bet worth taking
Oh,
for me.
absolutely.
I if it were me, I would be able to justify it. I would look back and say, look, you're in my shoes at that time, not knowing what we know now. If it didn't pan out, if you look at the prospect, yeah, you take a shot on that with the right QB coach. If you could get him with Frank Wright in a position where he didn't have to do everything. Yeah, absolutely. Do it hands down. Different reason for different reasons from the other two, but I'd
Trace
absolutely do it.
Marshall, 50% like completions per route.
Yeah. Yeah.
1,500 yards.
Exactly. And just everything that he's not great at is stuff that you can kind of tweak with a bit. It's just experience. It's got to be that. It's just the experience for me and how he deals with it. But his ability to survive pressure in the NFL was predicated on a couple of things. The fact that A, he's big, he's strong, he's an athlete, and he is not fazed by pressure. Because there's lots of big dudes who are fazed by pressure, you know? I mean, Paxton Lynch is huge, but you know, you put it's a corner, he put himself. Whereas Anthony Richardson, there's no fear there. He knows he's 6'5", 240 pounds, and most guys will just bounce off him, and it's fine. So I feel really, really good about taking the bet. Do I feel good that he'll turn out to be a good quarterback? It's 50-50. But just imagine if it hits. Just imagine. And you take the bet.
Well, let me put it this way. You're going to look more stupid for missing on him than you are. You're going to look more stupid if you decide not to take him and he's a hit than you will if he's a miss and you do take him. I know this as a Bears fan, with a team that took Mitch Trubisky over Patrick Mahomes. So, you know. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah.
You have those three.
Yes.
So the way it shakes out for me is there's Bryce Young, then a gap.
Yeah.
If I hold my fingers like half an inch apart, that's the gap, right?
Yeah.
And then there's CJ Stroud. And then there's probably another half inch gap to Anthony Richardson. And then there is a gap that I would hold my arms as far apart as I possibly could to our QB four. For me, Will Levis scares me. I am very, very scared by Will Levis.
Will Levis, and I am 100% prepared to look very, very foolish, is the one that I think has the biggest bust potential. I understand why coaches look at him with little hearts in their eyes. I really do. But that's because coaches are looking at what they think they can get out of him. And I'm not sure that's who he is.
I will start with the things I like. I like the size. I like the athlete. I like the runner. I like the arm talent. Absolutely. I love the toughness. He played in a lot of pain this year. And I absolutely get why people buy into that. Absolutely.
Oh, I get the feeling in all of his interviews, he's won over pretty much every team he's been interviewed by. As long as he doesn't ask for a coffee, of course, but we'll get into that in a bit.
But I see the dude that puts mayonnaise in.
Is, yeah. And he's also the dude. Have you
Oh
seen the
wow.
video of him eating the
I
banana with the
mean he's
skin
not even
on?
a third rounder now. I mean the fourth. No,
Yeah.
carry on.
He's also the dude that apparently the mayonnaise thing's a bit of a joke. But he
Yeah,
then
good.
someone said he eats bananas with the skin on, and they then put a video of
Oh,
him
that's
up
awful.
eating a banana with the skin on.
Okay. On my list of things I'm concerned about, I will come back around to this. No, because it's relevant. And it will, I will illuminate why it's relevant. But the things that really worry me. So I watched him, right? And I squint. Sometimes I squint and think, well, what does that silhouette look like? Ball drops low, down by the hip, comes up and over, comes out. It's got pace on it. It's got a great arc on it, but it doesn't always go where it's supposed to. You watch the quarterback under pressure and they just seem to soul themselves and not really know what they're doing. They're not very good under pressure. They're big and strong, but they play like a guy who is skittish. The accuracy is very hit and miss scattershot. Do you know who I walked away thinking he reminded me of most?
You, I'm slightly concerned you're about to mention the greatest ever bet Chicago Bears quarterback, but we'll go
It's not the greatest ever Chicago
on.
Bears quarterback. It's latter career Carson Wentz. He has Wentzy moments that, if he was a weather
Wincy
person,
moments.
if he was a weather person, he'd be Wincy Willis, for those of you over 40 who remember Wincy Willis. And again, I'm going to quote Brian Tarkenton. He said, it was used to say the difference between young quarterbacks, the good ones and the bad ones, is the good ones are the ones that don't shit themselves when the lights come on. And there's an element of Will Levis, pooing himself when the lights sometimes come on. Now, whether his 2022 is really attributable that much to injury, I don't know. But 2021 also shows he can be scattershot. He isn't fundamentally that sound as a thrower or a passer, and he is not great under pressure at all. The offense is NFL-ish. It's play action based kind of offense. It's the kind of thing that, you see a lot in the NFL, lots of inside and outside zone, lots of boot off the back of that. And he's not bad at that, but in like true drop back passing, I don't think he's very good at this moment. I don't really trust him to be much of a decision maker under pressure either. I am very concerned that he's probably closer to Jacob Eason than Josh Allen on that sort of spectrum, if you catch my drift. And that is my concern, that kind of everybody is a little bit too high on him. It does bother me a little bit, almost to the point where the guy I had at five at one point was ahead of him on my board. But I think with Will Levis, the rumor is that he is absolutely bang on going to be an Indianapolis Colt. I don't know. I don't know. For me, that's the right thing for Will. And I certainly feel like it's a bit rich for me. I don't know. I don't see him as being somebody I would take in the top 15. Back end of the first, yeah.
I
No, I don't.
don't think the Indianapolis Colts is a really particularly great landing spot for him, if I'm honest with
not
you.
Not at all. No. Like, Frank Reich was still there, maybe.
Yeah. I like Shane Steichen, don't get me wrong. And Jim Bob Cooter's the guy that will get just, if they need to calm him down a bit, that's the guy that's going to do it. But I don't know. Wonder if you just literally sit him for a year and have him buying Gardner Minshew for the year.
I mean, the tools are there. The tools are absolutely there. Okay.
Yeah.
But the difference between him and Anthony Richardson is I can see Anthony Richardson is trying to do the right thing and absolutely going the right way about trying to do it. And he just needs more experience. Whereas with Will Levis, I'm not convinced that's the case.
No.
So for me, he was never really QB3 at any point for me. The guy who almost was my QB4 is Hendon Hooker.
Interesting.
Almost.
Yeah.
So the things that help my Hendon Hooker back is the fact that the two main things are the Tennessee offense. Now, from a schematic standpoint, it's genius, it's wonderful, it's brilliant. But it muddies the waters on player evaluation because it puts players in advantageous situations that they won't experience at the next level. That's quite hard, and a lot of it makes it more about projection. Hendon Hooker is going to be a little bit younger than Sam Darnold when he enters the league.
Yeah.
So he is an old rookie. He's an old rookie coming off a significant injury. In fact, he's torn it in November, so he probably wouldn't even be ready for the start of the season. And the Tennessee offense is designed to create open throws, mismatches, and free releases for receivers and, you know, take advantage of space. So it does define throws for you. There's not that much kind of if, then kind of choose your own adventure progression.
Yeah.
As I like to call them now, choose your own adventure. If this, then that. If this, then that. The good things I like about Hendon Hooker. Throws a pretty go ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty. It's beautifully weighted. Lots of touch. Comes down like it lands like a punt, and that's what you want. It goes up there like a rocket. Comes down like a punt. And it just is so soft. It's gorgeous. Got better every year. Decent runner in the open field, and has proven that he can win. He limits mistakes as well. He's thrown 5 picks in 2 years.
Is the ideal situation for him then, like, in as the second guy in like a wildcat offense, like the guy you bring on as like a complete change of pace?
No, I think he's a guy who deserves a shot to be a starter.
Interesting.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
I think he deserves it. The age is prohibitive, I think, but I think that I'd be really interested to see. With some of the stuff he can do as a thrower and the way that he limits mistakes and the way that he can actually be very accurate, I'd be very interested to see what he did in a more expansive offense. I'm intrigued by him. Don't get me wrong, I don't think he's going to be amazing, but I think he's somebody who I want to see what more there is. I'm encouraged by what little I can glean from film. Although, you know, when things break down, he does have one answer, which is just take off. You know?
Yeah.
And he's already got himself injured. So, I think he did it. But it is the relative accuracy, the fact that he is such a good deep ball thrower, he has some athletic ability, he's really good at making good decisions and limiting mistakes, turnovers. I just think that he could be something. He could be a Jacoby Brissett type player.
Yes, that's a really nice one. I like that. Also, I'm less concerned about age for quarterbacks. Quarterbacks tend to play till they're, well, can do if they're good, play till like at least their late 30s. So
it's just you'd rather that he was 30 when he signed his third contract as opposed to being 35.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So I feel pretty good about Hendon Hooker. Tanner McKee of Stanford is kind of, he's one of those breeds of quarterbacks that I think is kind of dying a little bit. He's good from in the pocket. He's kind of, I mean, he's been stuck in the Stanford offense, which isn't particularly great, and his one really good wide receiver, Michael Wilson, was hurt for most of the time. But he struggles under pressure. And when he is pressured, the decisions are like, really? And he doesn't really have any particular sort of heat or sort of any kind of real refinement or elite strength as a passer. So he's kind of a guy that I don't really see being a starter at the next level at all. If there was a guy who was going to be Brock Purdy, there is a guy who could be. There's two actually. Would you like to guess who they are? There's two.
Stetson Bennett.
I think Stetson Bennett, who again is old, he only really for me has the potential to be Brock Purdy because, like, just like with Brock Purdy, you go, yeah, right, that will happen. But the thing about Stetson Bennett is that, yeah, he started at quarterback for the Georgia Bulldogs, has two national championships. He's 5'11", he's 192 pounds, he has tiny, tiny arms. He is a hashtag underrated athlete, though. Yeah, 4.67 40-yard dash, 33.5 vertical, 9'10" broad. You know, a bit of running upside, but he is like athletically, in terms of quarterback athleticism, very, very average, but he is pretty good pocket presence. He makes pretty good decisions. He has a case of the fumbles, which, you know, yeah. But just like he is unafraid. And he's also the kind of guy that will throw two or three picks and not give a damn. So he's kind of a guy who is he has 10-year backup written all over
Oh, absolutely.
him. Okay. With some potential Brock Purdy upside. Because he is
Yes.
hashtag a winner and hashtag an underdog. But the real dark horse in this class for me is Dorian Thompson Robinson of UCLA.
Doesn't mind,
Sorry,
yes, yeah.
I don't understand why people aren't really talking about him. I don't understand it. I think he's so much better than he gets credit for being. I get that, you know. He's not Anthony Richardson or Bryce Young, but it's kind of, if I were to sort of rank him with other quarterbacks that have been out recently, I think he's there with the kind of the Kenny Picketts in that sort of tier for me. I see him as being like a round two or three guy. I think he's a good thrower of the ball, makes good decisions for the most part. Fairly accurate, good, nice, easy throwing motion. I don't have a problem with him as a player. I think he is someone who again could be a very good backup and somebody who actually, if things click in the right offense, he could surprise people.
Where do you think he would have gone last year?
It's my opinion, I think he would have been probably QB2.
Well, it's Spine Picker.
Me, I think he would have been QB2, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's how I see.
Yeah.
I rate him more highly than probably most people do, because all I see is a pretty good quarterback, really honest.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So yeah, that's kind of my opinion on the class. I mean, Aidan O'Connell of Purdue, I don't get it. I looked for more, but it just never really came for me. And I think that's the class for me, but this class has massive boom and bust potential all over it.
Think you could get relevant quarterbacks in the second, third round this year.
Yeah, Tanner McKee though, he's going to get overdrafted,
Oh,
and Dorian Thompson Robinson will get underdrafted.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. That makes absolute sense.
But yeah, if they were all 6'3" and 215 pounds, then Bryce Young is the best quarterback
Absolutely.
of all of them.
Absolutely agree.
Probably the one I think that, yeah, of the top three, I can see a path where they are perennial Pro Bowl players.
Yeah, yeah, I could as well. The top three are the ones that they really stand out, and I think Levis is behind that three as well. So, yeah, so I completely
the gap,
agree.
But I just feel the gap is so much bigger than most people do. I'm not into Levis at all. Too much Wentzy vibes there. Too many Wentzy vibes.
I will point out that I also wasn't into Justin Herbert. So, you know, take what I'm saying with a pinch of salt. But yeah,
I wasn't, and he's probably one of my favorite quarterbacks in the NFL now.
Absolutely, yeah, completely agree. Yeah, it's weird because I think if I was in that position and I wasn't and I'd just been hired as a GM, I'm probably taking Anthony Richardson because I'm probably thinking there's some good quarterbacks coming up next year. If it all messes up, I'll just do that.
I would draft Bryce Young, and even if it didn't work out, I would always stand by my decision because he was the best damn quarterback.
Oh, yeah. I don't get me wrong. I think Bryce Young's probably the one that stands the best chance of being
the
best
one high-level trait. The one high-level trait that is hardest to find.
Yeah.
And when you see it in a quarterback, don't overthink it.
Yeah. Yeah. So Bryce Young, probably going number one overall anyway. I think that's it. So we've got one more before the draft, which will probably be, I don't know when these are coming out. I'm going to try and get these up tonight, but I might fall asleep before then, if I'm honest with you. We'll have one more. Whatever happens, they'll all be out on the very, very latest, the Thursday before the draft anyway. And then Friday morning, you will have a pod after round one, which I'm very looking forward to. The post-draft pod is one of my favorites, even if it's just me reeling off a list of names. And then I'm going to try and do one for the second and third round as well, like immediately afterwards as well. But that might
day
be the next.
Best.
Yeah.
Day two is the best day.
Day two is the most fun for nearly every single reason as well. So day two, you tend to have the more interesting players that we kind of like nerd out over a bit.
Yeah.
A certain Mr. McDonald, I think. Maybe, although I think he might go in round one, actually, thinking about it. But they're the players that we kind of like have been nerding out, thinking, oh, this could be good. Plus, it's two rounds. Plus, on top of which, you always get either the legends or fans making the announcement, which is always way more entertaining. There's more trades in those rounds as well.
Yeah.
And it goes a bit quicker. So it's just like, yeah, it's just fairly quick pace. It's not quite rounds 4 to 7 where you can't really keep up with who's going where, but it's day two is probably the best day of the draft. Day one's always a little bit of a disappointment because there's never as many trades as you think they're going to be, because you always assume, not you specifically, James, but people just assume that every team's going to trade. So
I'm just going to say, and I'll say it now if I don't say it in the next episode. And Lance Zierlein has said this. If Lance says this and other people are saying this, there's probably some element of truth to this. If multiple people that I trust are saying this, you think you know what's going to happen, but you don't have a clue.
Someone put up the poll of who would you rather draft, Ryan Leaf or Peyton Manning, the other day. I think it was Sam Monson who put it up, actually.
Oh, right.
And it was like 75% said Ryan Leaf. And it's like...
Well, it's very interesting because that draft, before that draft, I think it was Bill Walsh who said that Ryan Leaf reminded him of Joe Montana.
Oh, my God.
But also, and he said that publicly, but actually privately, Bill Polian asked him who he should draft. Asked Bill Walsh, who do you think I should draft? And actually privately, Bill Walsh said to him, it's Peyton Manning by a mile.
So,
you know, just an example that people say things to the public they don't actually mean at all. And it is lying season.
Yeah, except for the Carolina Panthers, because they're locked in. They're not going to trade out of number one. They've got the, because they now know that the one quarterback Houston wanted was Bryce Young. So they're like, well, we can't trade like three. Not that they would anyway, because the cards aren't moving up.
If because, the Texans do not take a quarterback at two,
yeah,
Arizona's phone is going to catch fire.
It really will. It really will. Oh, also, they've got new new jerseys, which I don't like. Don't know if you've seen them, James.
I haven't.
The giant Arizona written on their chest.
Great.
I don't love it, I'll be honest. Yeah,
it's all right. I've never liked the Cardinals anyway.
anyway, with that, we're back in a couple of dames. Dames? A couple of dames. You're back in a couple of days to round this out with cornerbacks. And I say we might do a cheeky little mock draft as well. As discussed, if you want to get involved in something resembling a mock draft, we'll do it on Thursday evening before the actual draft. And just come join the Discord. We're going to do it live on Discord on one of the live chats. But we will put all the responses up on the Twitter as well. So come join them. Yes. I think that's going to be the quickest way of doing it. Even if it's just six of us making multiple picks.
Yeah.
We can do that.
Even if it's just you, me, and Phil chatting each other.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Right. Yep. Back soon. All these pods will be up at some point, but you know, you're listening to it, so you know that already. Thank you for listening. And Twitter's at GridIronGents. Emails hellochaps@gridirongentlemen.com. The website's back up and everything now as well. So yeah. Thank you very much. Discord's pinned tweet on the Twitter. I'm definitely going now. Goodbye.